this boring lives of bickering wives.
Is that a subreddit?
No, it's what I called the chat.
Oh, I didn't see that. Like, women are competitive, and so I just don't understand how when you tell them all to be so perfect, and you put them in this really weird culture, how they're not gonna, like, I don't know, henpeck each other to death first? Like, survival of the fittest? I don't know. It just feels like it's a predatory environment for women.
Well, yes. Yes. Gigi, I'm interested from you, these background spaces, if they are Mormonish? Because, like, there's some times when they're showing, like, the Catholic cathedral, or they're showing, like, Catholic symbiology as opposed to, like, LDS symbolism.
So I haven't watched this show at all. So I really need to watch and see what they're trying to do from a symbolic point of view. I mean, as far as, is there some like iconography that runs throughout like the Mormon culture? Is that what you're asking?
Like, is that what a meeting house looks like? Or are they using something like a Lutheran church?
Oh.
Because, you know, they're not going to get to be able to film in a Mormon church
that. Yeah. Okay. So let me ask you, Patience, have you watched these clips?
I have watched the first episode of this. I hate it.
Because I wasn't sure if we were going to kind of like live stream it together or how you were going to do that.
Yeah, I'm going to record our comments. Yeah, that's exactly what I want to do.
Yeah, and so I am dying to see so I can answer your question because I kind of know what you're asking. Like, oh God, there's a funny subreddit somewhere where they show a couch and everyone, no matter where they are in America, they recognize it. It's like, oh, those are the couches that always sat inside of whichever ward building you went into. When you went into the foyer, before you went into the chapel, they all had like one of two different couches from the 80s. And you could go anywhere in America, basically, and be kind of guaranteed to see those couches and that furniture. So in bulk, they saved a lot of money and everybody kind of had a standard look to them. The temples are all different and they're supposed to like reflect something about wherever they are.
Because like stained glass, I don't know if it's a big Mormon thing where they'll show some stained glass or like an altar. Like, do meeting houses or whatever have altars? Like, is that a thing?
So yes, there's an altar in the ceiling room typically, and that's where like a family is sealed for time and all eternity. But they don't really have altars in the normal churches or the stake centers, which are different.
Okay.
So a ward is like the small neighborhood, and then a stake center is a bigger place that can house more people for bigger conferences, and it encompasses the county. Like my church was in Ramona, but for stake center meetings and big dances for all the people in San Diego or whatever, there's like a stake center in Poway, which is a nearby town. There's a stake center in San Diego. You know what I mean? It was like you have a government center and then like a town center. You went to your ward, and that was in a stake, and then there was a temple. And so those are where the places that you reported. It was like an inverted pyramid system.
Because we would go to the stake center near the house in Utah so that the dog could run around. Like, people use that field for their dogs to run.
Yeah. It would be like a bigger replica of a normal church, if I recall. You know, they had a basketball court. They had a baptismal font. They had a big old chapel. They all had the same couch, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it was like an inverted pyramid with a temple up here. You see?
Okay.
But that's a great mechanism for organization.
Well, Catholics have the same thing. You got your parish and you have your diocese. And your diocese typically has some type of cathedral.
To go back to your question about stained glass, what I find interesting is that if you look at stained glass from a historical perspective, and they have some in the Getty Center up here in LA if you wanted to study it. The reason that it's in churches is because it tells stories to people who can't read yet, right? So that, like they have a different window for whatever. Now, the Mormons, coming from a more Protestant type of a background in a way,
they don't want to have pictures, graven images. I get it.
So it goes a little bit more puritanical. So sometimes what you'll find is like some abstract stained glass in a celestial room or like glass blocks or something, because they want to make the celestial room look really ethereal, like the celestial kingdom. So they want you to go from like, I don't know, behind a curtain with a hole in it and a whole bunch of people wearing aprons and God knows what. When you hop through the thing and you go to the next room, because your husband brought you there, you're supposed to have a little time to put your feet up and meditate when you don't have to deal with the kids for a while. You know what I mean?
I saw that in Big Love, where she went through the veil and then they went for 15 minutes in the celestial room to taste a little slice of what heaven feels like.
It's like Disneyland. They got to keep the line moving.
Yep.
They give you a new name, which is basically like, you know, everybody gets the same one that day. Just kind of shuffle you through.
What's your name?
I didn't go through the temple.
Oh, okay.
I married a man who was, you know, going to hell. You know, I'm going out of darkness, but he'd end up in like the terrestrial kingdom, you know, because he wasn't raised anything. He's atheist. So he never believed in the church and denied it. I was a member of the church and denied it. And now I go to outer darkness when I die.
That's right.
Anyways, that's a tangent. I'm wondering if we've got this clip up because I'm looking at this woman with this outfit and this hair. And here's my critique already. Okay, let's just go here.
I'm converting the file type into a type that it will play in the browser, but it's taking a really fudging long time to do that.
So I have time to go get a popsicle is what you're saying.
You do have time to go and get a popsicle.
Oh, popsicle.
Go and get a popsicle and all of that shit. This is not turning out the way I'd hoped.
I got two popsicles. I'm on season like 16 of Taskmaster, by the way.
Oh, God. I think you're ahead of me now.
I mean, I fall asleep to it every night.
That's beautiful, Gigi.
I love that show.
What is it called?
Taskmaster. It's on YouTube. And the first like 10 seasons, there's no commercials, but I've been getting commercials lately. But it's this really funny show out of the UK. I think England, I would say, not Wales. It's where comedians get on and do silly chores that the Taskmaster assigns them. And they to watch how each of them address the challenge.
Oh,
so it's like carry this feather an acre and a half without it touching anything else. And if it floats away, it can only touch one thing at a time. Like some kind of weird rule. And it's like they all approach it very differently.
Interesting.
Yeah. But I'm curious to know about the secret lives of Mormon wives.
Aren't we all?
And not all of them are married.
Aren't they?
No.
Oh.
Have you seen this already?
Oh, I've seen season one like 3 times. It was a bit back, though. My sister-in-law, when it first came out, was like into it. And then she's like, it's so awful. She's like, it's like watching a car accident. You know, you just can't look away. And is that what it's really like?
Oh. Here we go.
Okay, good. I can see this and hear this.
Oh, yay.
What? Horn shoulders showing.
Like, that's not Mormon.
They aren't very Mormon. This is the thing. They're beyond cafeteria. They're just backslidden. You keep watching and commenting. Feel free to talk over it. I'm going to convert the next file.
Okay, this is good.
Gigi's into it.
This is, like, culturally Mormon. Like, they're not going to go and put their papers in like I did.
No.
They'll go to church with their parents, maybe. They keep the friends on the outer rim. I was never part of these women.
That's a good thing, JJ. These women are boring.
Brad and I got married 3 years after high school. And by that point, I had lost touch with a lot of these type of girls. But this is more Utah.
Very Utah.
Wait, can you pause it?
Yeah.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So all these Mormon wives, they get bored. They all know each other through the church. They're on a spectrum of Mormon cultural norms or whatever.
Right.
And a group of them get onto TikTok together and do silly dances and stuff and end up having an orgy, which spreads to like the whole group and their significant others.
Well, here's the thing. One of them, the most scandalous of them, starts saying stuff like, you know, she's hooked up with all the guys and they were soft swinging, whatever the fuck that means. And
okay.
I think at the end of the day, all of that shit didn't really happen.
Okay, so there were a few affairs and the guys were like, well, you know.
But I don't think it really even happened. I think she was just exaggerating some nothingness.
Yeah.
So as a lawyer, I would say I would need to see the evidence in context. Like, yeah.
And I think that's kind of the series is an exploration of what happened. Did that happen in the aftermath of that?
Okay, Patience, let me ask you a question. Should I watch the whole show first and then we go through your clips? Or should I just let it go like this? Because I'm willing to put the time in to watch the show first.
You kind of want to watch it, don't you?
I will confess, there was a time when I took time off work because I broke my arm snowboarding with Brad in Vancouver. And I just binge watched like the Real Housewives series. I don't know how and why I enjoyed it, but in my mind, I was like, guilty pleasures.
I tell you what, JJ, how about we do it this way? I don't want to watch it, but I love that you do. Can you like watch all of it and then we can just do like a whole episode where you tell me all about it?
Sure, we could totally do that for the next one. Because after we finish whatever we do tonight, then I'll probably go and find the next episode and watch it before I go to bed.
All right, what about you, Divchina? Do you have access to watch the whole thing on your own at some point?
I think so.
Let me tell you just how many episodes there are. There's 8 in the first season, 11 in the second season, and there's 11 in the third season.
Ooh, that's quite a binge.
I haven't seen the third. I just get confused because they all look alike to me.
They do. And I don't think they're that pretty. As someone who finds women attractive, I just find them really annoying.
Yes. And they all have this like fake super long hair extensions, super big boobs, super tiny waist.
Yeah.
And just this like personality.
The same brown contouring and bronzer.
Oh, someone needs to take the bronzer off these women. It's okay, you know. Don't try to dress like a drag queen if you're not. Like, it's fine.
And I don't understand where anybody's garments are, because...
Oh, they're not wearing them.
They're wearing hoochie stuff the whole time.
Yeah, no, they're past that. Now, you could tell the minute they started showing those porn shoulders and those off the shoulders, I was like, oh, we're not dealing with Temple Mormons.
No.
We're dealing with, like, casual cultural Mormons that are on a scale of 1 to 10.
Mm-hmm.
And they're at about a 0.
Yeah.
The fact that Mormon Wives is in the title of the show is a travesty.
The same story as a group of people wait tables together and for a period of time they're young and they're swinging.
Why don't we just flip over to the clips I've got for Saints 28 because it's just as shite.
Well, I love the parallelism between the secret life of Mormon wives and Mom Talk juxtaposed to Relief Society.
Right.
Like, Mormon women find their purpose. Before the videos, it was the MLMs. Like, that's how many Mormon women, I think, probably found purpose, meaning, identity.
Here's how I would describe it.
Mm-hmm.
On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the most Mormon you can get to the highest heaven, those are the Relief Society women on the podcast. And 0 being the women on the Secret Lives of Mormon Wives. Now, the MLMs are the ladies on the side there hustling a business. So it's triangular circle jerk.
Triangular circle jerk.
Well, let me rephrase. It's like an ever-moving blob of energy of these women coming in and out of these different phases of life and whoredom. You know, you're whoring it up for the man who's your husband or the man that's paying you money. Or the person that you're praying to so that you can get out of the money and the man, right?
Are all Mormon women part of Relief Society? I mean, is it by default?
Oh, that is a really good question, actually. Do you know?
Yeah, so basically from what I recall is you're a young woman up until like 18 or 19, and then you go to Relief Society, and I can't remember exactly what age you do that, because by the time I was 18, I was no longer in Young Women's, and people were starting to get married, and it was like basically Relief Society, or if you were going off to college, they had like younger Relief Society. But anyways, yeah, it's like kind of age-based. Depending on where you're located, that could be really old ladies in you, or it could be like you and everybody else your age. And if it's you and everybody else your age, because you're all in like a college town or whatever, it could be a lot of fun. Like BYU, you know what I mean? People are all, they're going to ice cream parlors and shit.
So you don't join Relief Society as a separate thing.
Like, you don't get pledged in, you kind of age in. Yeah, you go from, like, primary, which is where all the kids go, up until the age of, like, 12. And then from 12 to 18, you're in young women, young men's. Oh, and then they have, like, young adult, kind of, and then Relief Society. Because young adults is, like, the singles ward, where all the singles go to dates. So you're no longer going to your local neighborhood ward, you're going to, like, a bigger ward, so you can meet other eligible bachelors in your area.
That's bonkers, isn't it?
It's very efficient.
They actually intentionally create a meat market.
And everybody's out of high school. So you go there until you're 30 or so. And as soon as you get married, you go to the adult ward, the family ward with the other married families, and then Relief Society.
So when they say that this is like the largest women's organization in the world, it's...
By default.
Okay.
So it's the inverted triangle. Oh, maybe it should be like this.
Gigi's trying to explain church hierarchy with gang signs.
Sorry, but if you want to go back to some of these clips, it would be great.
Well, I'll do a little blurb here. Welcome to Book of Boredom Podcast. Today, we're going to roast the Saints podcast, episode 28, as we've been doing. And today's Saints is a lot about the Relief Society and also a little bit more about Joseph Smith's shenanigans with his many wives. And today I have with me Sister Divchina. Welcome back.
Hello.
Lovely to have you. And of course, we've got Sister Gigi here as well.
Right.
Right. And we've just been trying to work out what we're going to do with this episode because I've had endless technical issues and I've just got them all sorted out. And we started to record a little bit of our commentary on the secret lives of Mormon wives. And then we realized that, well, I already knew I thought it was boring. And Gigi decided, hang on, this is just the sort of thing I want to binge. And Divchina's seen the first two seasons. So we're going to put a pin in that particular topic. Divchina's going to watch the third season. Gigi's going to watch all.
So I'm going to watch three seasons as soon as we get off of this podcast. Okay, I have something to look forward to.
That's right. Don't worry. It's pretty light on content. You'll fly through them. And then at a future episode, both of you tell me all the key highlights of this shitty series, and then I'll know what it's about, and I won't have had to have watched it.
I'm going to give myself one task to make this more interesting since we're doing a Taskmaster version now.
Oh, that's right. You like Taskmaster. Yes.
I will try and draw, like on a sketch pad, like a visual aid.
Oh, that is awesome.
So I'll try to do a hand-drawn artistic flipbook, if you will, or slideshow.
I love it.
But I'm not going to put a lot of energy into it. So it's going to be like really quick and dirty.
Quick and dirty's good.
And I'll do caricatures of the main people we need to know. And then whatever it is their conflict is and like how that resolves by the end of the show or not.
Yeah, because there's only a handful of women, right?
It's going to be quick and dirty, and I'll give everybody a nickname.
Oh, excellent. Give them all a nickname. Yes.
Yeah, that always helps people remember.
We need it because they all look the same.
Right?
Yes.
I won't be bitchy and give them a nickname about how they look. I will do it based on how they behave.
Oh, there's plenty to work with.
Hopefully that is a feminist way to do it. Although, I think there's something to be said if they've had so much work that it's obvious that it's a question of character. Sometimes I want to include that just to give a visual aid.
Yeah.
Because if somebody has tattooed their whole face and pierced their ears to where their lobes have been disfigured because they have significant meaning for that, they've decided to pierce their tongue and give themselves one of those forked tongues. And
oh, God.
They're trying to send me a message.
Yeah.
I am here to observe it.
It'd be wrong if you didn't.
But I will observe it like the rare, interesting gloom that it is.
That's right.
Because everyone's different, and some people went to Mar-a-Lago this week dressed in ball gowns and furry masks.
Oh, really?
You didn't hear about that?
Tell me about that. I haven't heard about that. My mum was telling me this morning that apparently Trump's lost Mar-a-Lago. That's what she said. Now, her take on the news is not always quite right.
I'm just looking it up. And it's like Mar-a-Lago furry Marie Antoinette party.
A furry Marie Antoinette party? How do those two things come together?
I don't know if they had matching dog outfits and masks. And like one was a girl St. Bernard and one was a boy St. Bernard. It was really well done. And they danced. Maybe it's a protest. Who knows?
Right.
Anyways, did we want to listen to another clip? Patience, I didn't mean to hijack you.
Yeah, let's play a clip. So I'll just tell you who's on the episode. The regulars are Ben Godfrey, he's the host, and then we've got Sarah Eyring.
Oh.
She's the token female, feeding whatever historian they've got on at the time with the appropriate prompts to say whatever they need to say.
Right, right, right.
And this week we have Kate Holbrook.
The apologist.
That's right, the apologist. She's a PhD historian with the Church History Department. So she'll be doing most of the talking.
If I had paper and a pen, I would start sketching these people out.
Please do. It can be the artwork, because the artwork just takes me way too long.
How slapdash can this be? Can I just put it on all of this?
It can be real slapdash. They used to say it's on the Mormon channel, and then I think they edited the episodes out where it said it was on the Mormon channel because they don't say Mormon anymore. But now that we've got a new prophet, I think maybe they might take Mormon back again. Do you reckon they will?
I mean, I think that they're trying to distance themselves and embrace more of the word Christian, but not trying to be too in your face about it. Like, I don't know. I think they're in a really hard place because the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, maybe they would rephrase it someday to be just Church of Saints.
What they have been doing, at least what I've been hearing, is moving towards Church of Jesus Christ. So it blends in very much with evangelical Christians.
Yeah, I've kind of been seeing that.
Okay, that's a really good move too, because it is a mouthful from a marketing perspective, and people don't want to come across too culty.
The cult doesn't want to come across too culty.
But change is really hard when you're that enmeshed.
When you're a cult, it's really hard to not be a cult, isn't it?
I mean, I really hope I live long enough to watch David Miscavige out of The Scientologist pass away. Naturally, if he does, he'll probably just really be going to like another planet or whatever. And I say that because he might sue you if you put this on the air. Like, the Scientologists are bad for suing people.
Oh, are they? Oh.
They're so bad that we learned about it in law school.
Oh, great.
And we are in California, so we really learned about it in law school.
I bet they're teaching people in law school about Trump now.
Oh,
because he's pretty bad too.
Oh my God, I would not want to be in a constitutional law class in this day and age, I will tell you, because things are changing so much.
Yeah.
Things we never thought people would change because they always told us they wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the law is being really tested right about now. I think we're learning that it doesn't work. We were just all in cahoots that it worked before.
Brad and I turned down a trip to go to Mexico because I don't want to do international travel right now.
No, no, you do not.
I mean, I just don't want to have to get a burner phone. Not that I probably don't already need one. I mean, I'm not doing anything illegal, and I am very intentional with my actions because I'm an attorney and I really know where to draw the line because I've seen, you know, I've read history. I know this fucking shit.
I think one of the challenges is that for years, there's been different organizations who put on Know Your Rights workshops for citizens, non-citizens. But now what we thought were rights, we don't know if anymore they are rights.
Yeah, because they're pulling people over in Minneapolis and just asking them for their papers. Literally, just people on the street. It's horrifying.
Okay, so I've called this first clip. Don't worry, it's not for time. At least for now.
Mary Leitner's story is really important for helping us to understand that it wasn't just a chance to be married to more than one woman, and that marriage might mean different things. So Mary was married to a man named Adam, and she loved him, but Adam didn't want to join the church. The saint's understanding at the time was that you could not achieve full salvation after this life unless you were sealed to another person in marriage for eternity. And so Joseph Smith approached Mary and he said, "Would you like to be sealed to me for eternity?" But it wouldn't be a marriage for time. It would just be after this life. She tells Joseph Smith, "I still can't do this unless I've had a witness from God." And she prays to see an angel. One night she's staying at her aunt's house, and in the middle of the night, this angel with a very bright face puts its face right in front of her. It was very scary for her. She threw the covers over her head, and the angel went away. And so she still didn't count that as a witness. But within a few days, she had another spiritual witness. Mary was not the only woman who was married to whom Joseph was sealed. These symbols, they were about creating an eternal, broad spiritual connection between people, uniting people to the family of God.
It's not about fucking more women. It's about an eternal, broad spiritual connection to people. So don't worry. Thoughts?
Isn't that the way it is now? Like, isn't this kind of a deflection?
It's a loophole. Yeah, she didn't want to divorce her husband. He's paying the fucking bills. Don't hate him. So the loophole is that she marries, and I put that in quotes. So it's not a physical thing. It's a spiritual marriage because he doesn't want to sleep with this old hag. He just wants to take her money and tell her she's going to the highest level of heaven. So she's got to get into the heaven. So how's she going to do that? She's got to marry somebody that's in the church. And, you know, this is how she gets there.
Ah,
And then when she gets there, she gets to make spirit babies with him for eternity.
Yeah, like so she can have sex with the leader when her body turns back into a young lady again.
Oh, their body turns back to young lady.
If it's heaven, why would you choose to go to heaven with your bones broken? No, put me at my best looking ever.
And then the husband's down there in the celestial kingdom.
With all the other whores. Oh, God, he'll have a great time.
Everybody wins. That's the best part about Mormonism, isn't it?
The only level of heaven that has genitalia, though, is the celestial kingdom. Otherwise, they're like Barbie dolls.
Oh, really?
Oh, I didn't remember that.
They call it a terrestrial smoothie or something.
Never heard. I don't remember ever hearing that. Here, about patience. What did she say? She prayed about it like a thing came to her in her bed.
So Joseph was like, oh, look, you know, don't take my word for it. You go and pray about it. Like, don't feel forced into it. She prayed to see an angel as confirmation. And I bet Joseph knew that too, that that's what she was praying for.
What did the angel need to look like? I mean, what qualifies as an angel?
Well, exactly. All of a sudden, this one night while she was staying at her aunt's place, this dude with a bright face showed up right in front of her and scared the fuck out of her. She hid under the covers and she didn't take that as the sign. Now, that could have just been a bad dream, or it could have been Joseph or one of his minions trying to scare her by holding a candle up to his face or whatever the fuck they had back then. Who knows? Anyway, apparently there was something else that ended up pushing it over the line for her. She got some other confirmation. They don't talk about it in the episode. Maybe they do in the book, I don't know. But it still just seems coercive to me and all just a little bit stupid.
And my guess is they were probably fasting too while they were doing all this praying for a number of days. Maybe, you know, you start hallucinating.
She had a vivid dream. Like, I mean, do you want me to read you all my vivid dreams I've been writing down lately? Like, Brad had a dream last night. He had a pet squirrel that was bigger than pudding.
Oh, wow. That's a big rodent.
Oh, my God. I had a dream that there was a real-life polar bear in the zoo located in Santa Paula, and the library used it as its mascot. I dreamed that I brought this live polar bear to an event at the library parking lot, and he escaped at the back of my El Camino. And then the polar bear, who was very friendly, wandered around and collected a bunch of puppies and brought them back to the El Camino, and I was struggling to get the polar bear back into the El Camino and take it back to the zoo.
I think that is a message that you're supposed to be sealed to Joseph Smith.
I gotta get this out of my house. It's haunting me.
What is that again?
It's a tooth of a saber-toothed tiger that lives in the library, and he's missing one, and I have to make a new one and attach it to his head.
And it's like a plush toy tooth thing.
It is a life-size museum-quality saber-toothed tiger that was in the local museum, which we inherited when they went bankrupt.
Is that tooth a real tooth?
Is it like taxidermy?
No, it's like made out of foam, chicken wire, and fake fur with hot glue.
You just said museum quality. I'm not sure that quite qualifies.
It was in a museum in Santa Paula. It was in the oil and gas museum.
There was just one last thing I wanted to say about that clip, and that is, like, it may only be for eternity, not time, so not an earthly marriage is what he's saying, but I bet if her husband ended up dying, either of old age or whatever, he'd be thinking, ooh, I could get it on with her now. It's like he's collecting them for later.
I'm trying to draw her in her bed with a Mormon missionary coming through the window. But I don't know how to draw a Mormon missionary. It's so hard for me to draw stick figure people. But I'm putting like a book in his hand and like a badge. Oh, this is so bad. But they come in twos.
What come in twos?
Mormon missionaries always come in pairs.
Oh, they do. All right, let's play the next fucking thing then.
Yep.
I've called this next one, don't take my word for it, take my gaslighting.
It's interesting to learn that Joseph asked these women to get spiritual confirmation of their own, because that reminds me of the way that church leaders today, of course, you know, give us direction from Heavenly Father.
It means a lot to me, too, that that's been from the very beginning, that receive your own testimony, receive your own witness has been part of our doctrine.
Receive your own adventure. As long as it's Joseph's adventure.
Mm-hmm.
When the missionaries came ages ago, when I was still a teenager, that was their whole thing. Oh, but you pray about it. And it's like, okay, I don't think I'm going to get the same answer you get.
If you're in a room of people that all are believers and all they can do is talk about what they believe and how they believe it and why they believe it and how it makes them feel and how they're so happy and they're so happy to have you here and you're so special and you're so loved, that's how they get you in.
Mm-hmm.
It's the form of gaslighting, right?
Right.
And where does that phrase come from? Like, I love telling this story. You guys know where that came from, right?
The movie.
Tell me again, because I keep forgetting.
See, I think it was a book before it was a movie, because that's how I heard about it, was in my literature and writing classes. And it was basically this man drives his wife crazy by, you know, turning down the gas lamps in the house, because it's the Victorian times, you know, you've got gas lamps on the walls and things now. But he can control all the lighting in the whole house. And she keeps going to him and she's like, Jesus, the lighting getting dimmer in here? And he's like, no, honey, what are you talking about? You're crazy. And then he turns it down a little bit more the next day and it gets darker. And she's like, babe, am I losing my sight? To the point where he's walking in the dark and he's calling her crazy to convince her that she's going blind and insane.
Jesus.
So it's kind of morbid, because lying to somebody's face and so convincingly and manipulating the situation to such an extent that they're crazy to think any other way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how he had so much control over everyone, but when you read these minutes that we'll get onto a bit later of the Relief Society, it's just bonkers. Yeah, that is a feature of the church. Even though it sounds like it's free will, it can be weaponized.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I've read, I'm reflecting, I've prayed, I got this answer. Well, maybe you need to pray harder.
Right.
Because it doesn't sound like you're getting the right answer.
Exactly. Because we're all getting this answer. So you must be not praying hard enough, or you need to give more money to the church, or you're not taking on enough responsibility. Now, let me just say this and throw this in. There's a TikTok somewhere that does this evaluation where he explains that, you know, a lot of these churches are like franchises and they all buy like sermons from a certain place.
Oh, really?
And the sermons are designed to start where the first one of the season, which is like Easter Sunday, they do this real big inclusive thing because a lot of people are going to show up and it's like super, you know, bread and butter, whatever. People feel good. They come back next week. Then they do a show about, you know, spending more time with these people. Then they do another one that the music starts like at a certain pace and then reaches a crescendo and it becomes emotional at a certain point. By the third or fourth week that you're there is when they actually start to ask for money. But by then you're invested like 2, 3, 4 months with these people and your kids are now going to the same stupid whatever practice. Now that's these sophisticated churches. The Mormons haven't gotten quite there yet, because here's the problem. They're so proud of this. Each ward picks their bishop from another ward member, who could be a politician, he could be a dentist, he could be anything. Like, he'd be a plumber.
That's the one you always go for.
Mine was a plumber. So whatever their expertise is determines what kind of a ward you're in. Does that make sense? So that person can have a lot of power. And if they're really charismatic, I mean, you can have all kinds of interesting things happen.
Right.
I've been hearing, too, about a similar type of tactic where the missionaries have a lot of enthusiasm, love bombing to a potential new member, very inclusive, being very kind, very involved. And so the potential new member, you know, they're in the hands of these well-trained missionaries. And then once they get baptized, they get moved over to the ward and they're like, wait a minute, I just lost all my friends.
Yeah.
Like, this is not what I kind of signed up for. I signed up for this relationship with these people.
Yeah.
So confusion, kind of almost a bait and switch.
I mean, I will say yes and no, because by the time you're done working with missionaries, well, at least in my parents' case, they were young parents at that point. They didn't have anything in common with missionaries. They needed to meet other people their age with kids who they could swap babysitting and recipes with. So by the time they got into the Relief Society in the main ward, they are clumped in with the people that are all living the rest of their midlife.
Right.
Until you go to the old folks' home and die. You are in that church as long as you don't move. And if you move, you get all new friends, because then you're in that ward. It's a very MLM structured type of a situation.
It's an MLM church, yeah.
Everything's a pyramid.
Everything's a pyramid. All right. I've called this next clip, Anything You Can Do, I Can Twist My Way.
Ugh.
Margaret Cook was working as a seamstress to Sarah Kimball, who was a more well-to-do married woman in Nauvoo. And both of them were excited about the temple construction, and both of them wanted to help. She and Sarah had noticed that the men, a lot of them were wearing very ragged clothing. So together they decided to form a sewing society. Sarah and Margaret asked Eliza R. Snow whether she would write up a constitution. And then they took their constitution to Joseph Smith.
Joseph said it was the best constitution of its kind. "But this is not what you want," he said. "Tell the sisters their offering is accepted of the Lord, and he has something better for them. I will organize the women under the priesthood after the pattern of the priesthood," Joseph said. "I now have the key by which I can do it."
You know, Ben, every time we tell this story, people tend to say, they took the Constitution to him. And he said, "This looks very nice, dear, but I have something better in mind." And I never liked that. I always thought, oh, that's so condescending. I just hated that detail. And when I told the story myself, I would leave that detail out. Until working on the first 50 years of Relief Society, I really started to understand how much he had something better to give them. The difference between a benevolent society and Joseph Smith organizing them after the pattern of the priesthood, making this a women's quorum, the organization through which women could really come into their own and find concrete, spiritual, authoritative ways to participate in the building of the kingdom. That difference means everything. And now I never leave that detail out when I tell this story.
It's virtue signaling as to what it is to give deference to the patriarchy, right? Oh, he knows better. Let's consult with him. And no, I'm not saying that that's a bad thing. Like, I consult with men and women all the time on library board things, right? We consult with each other. So, I mean, you can look at it both ways. You can villainize it. But from a historical perspective, that's kind of how you behaved.
I think he wanted to keep the ladies in line. He'd worked out how to keep the men in line with his masonry hyped up as church, but now he worked out how to keep the women in line because he couldn't be around them all the time.
They need to please each other.
That's right. It's like, oh, I can police them from the top and just pull the strings. But telling them he's now been given the key. Oh, come on now. What key? He just pulls these prophetic words out that don't mean anything.
Yeah, I saw this video of this woman trying to train you how to be able to give an inspiring sermon in front of a crowd of 10,000 Charlie Kirk wife Christians, right? You know, you start your story really slow and you just try to act like you're just anybody else. You were just like them and they are just like you. Then something happened. You slow down. And then you quote something, but then you struggle with it. And you quote that verse again. And then you struggle with it. And then you repeat something three times.
Oh, yeah.
And you take a deep breath.
Mm-hmm.
And you repeat it three times. And you repeat it three times. And it's like, whatever. But it's like, you realize how much of it is you could say anything. And depending on the cadence and the tone and the gibberishness of its poetry and the imagery and the word salad that it produces, you can do a lot with people that are looking to connect with other people. And Joseph Smith is the charismatic leader to do it. God love him. Look what he built. He was a baller.
Absolutely. And you see this with televangelists all the time. They'll start out slowly, and then there's a moment where they're struck by the spirit. The onlooker is like, wow. No, it's formulaic rhetoric.
Mm-hmm. It's something they teach in public speaking.
It's a performance.
Yes, it's a performance.
Yeah.
Maybe even an improvised performance in some ways, but it still has a structure.
Yeah. I mean, I took a speech class in junior college. You know, they give you a topic and you practice getting up in front of people and giving speeches because you're going to be giving presentations in offices or courtrooms or selling cakes, whatever it is you have to interact with other humans. And it's best that you can speak on the fly.
Yeah.
That's what being an adult is. Welcome to the world.
What I'm curious about in this clip is it sounds like the women came up with their constitution. It goes to Joseph. He's now a constitutional scholar.
Right.
And says, this is a great example, but I'm going to make it better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what I understand from Relief Society is the bishop is still the one in charge.
Oh, yeah.
She is overseen by the bishopric.
Yeah.
Right. It's a women's organization controlled by men.
Yes.
Just like the Quorum of the Twelve and the Prophet above them. Ooh, I'm going to need a popsicle soon.
In the first Relief Society meetings, you'll see written into the minutes where they'll ask the men to leave while they go and get their meeting on. So at first, the men will be there. There'll be a couple of men, usually Joseph and some other knob. Then the men will leave and then they'll go and have their secret women's business. I actually think Joseph was delighted to be told to leave at that point. He didn't want to be there with all of the...
I know what you mean.
...intrigue of whatever the fuck was happening in that meeting. He only wanted to show up and see some nice-looking ladies that are dressed to the nines for the meeting and be seen.
Right.
And he wanted to just lay his seeds for whatever future conquest he's got going on.
Well, you know, keep the ladies busy sewing our pants.
Yeah.
Try not to, like, waste all the money gambling in the back rooms or whatever. I don't know. Having tea and gossiping. We do why they don't have tea. And behave yourselves and get along. And here's what you're going to do in your spare time so that you're not getting up to any trouble.
Oh, what is that?
I don't know if you can tell. It's a rough sketch of a woman sitting in bed with a man coming through the window.
I love it. That's great.
Very rough.
Thank you, Gigi, for saving me from having to come up with artwork.
Yeah, I'll keep working on it.
Gigi, this sketch reminds me of Visions of Glory, where they talk about this vision of a hovering spiritual being. This reminds me of Chad Daybell, as he talks about a spiritual being.
Okay.
I see our patterns over time of this Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Lying in bed, spiritual being. Back to the previous clip, I just have a reflection.
Yeah.
The woman who is the, let's say, of the upper level of society, at least to the seamstress. And the seamstress is the one who is sewing the clothes, right? There's probably an economic differential here and a cultural differential here. And they're both saying, you know, there's people in shabby clothes. Let's get them some nicer clothes. Who do you think is going to do that work? It's the seamstress, right? I mean, it sounds like one lady's writing a constitution for the other lady to do more work. Like, is the woman who's not the seamstress really going to start sewing?
No. What are they going to do?
That's curious.
I mean, I think the problem is more like when you're a pioneer, you don't necessarily have a seamstress that you can go to because it's just a bunch of houses on the prairie. Y'all are doing your own sewing and it's hard to keep up. And maybe let's do like a joint sewing group for some of the people that are sick or their wife is in the not hospital because they don't have one, stuck in the shitter if they've got one. I don't know. So, like, for whatever reason, these men are unkempt because they're widows or, like, they don't have a wife at home or she's drunk. I don't know. So, you know, it is a form of relief society for their own, for their group, not for the Indians on the trail and not for the Protestants, the Catholics, or anybody else that's not practiced maybe a little swinging on the side. You know what I mean? And they're all fiercely, I don't know, American dream driven.
Maybe they are, JJ.
It's bizarre.
Maybe they're all high. Are you on something right now? You seem pretty chill today, JJ.
I mean, I will say, like, I'm super tired and I'm on Sudafed from, like, this cold that's going around. I don't know if you can even tell.
Right. Is there a cold going around?
It's so bad.
Oh, my God.
We are having a flu epidemic right now. Hospitals are not allowing visitors or shutting that down because it's a 10-day flu.
We used to call it COVID, didn't we? But now we don't call it COVID anymore.
No, COVID's different.
Oh, so different.
It is so bad.
Yeah, a lot of people are very sick, and the flu vaccination missed the mark.
So I took diphenhydramine in order to breathe, and if you were walking in my house, it would smell like peppermint and eucalyptus because I've been boiling it nonstop. Mm-hmm. It's been so bad. Brad was like glad to leave this morning because he's like, you're a mess. Like, you're going to be sick all day and tomorrow. He's like, drink your zinc and your vitamin C.
Yep.
You can hear it in my voice. Like, I'm just exhausted.
You sound exhausted, yeah. Mm-hmm. Or high. One of the two.
I wish. No. Like we talked last week, I was like...
Yeah, it's not really your thing, is it?
No.
It's just
boring. In fact, Brad went down to San Diego just to go get drunk with all of his old buddies.
Oh, that's nice.
And now you'll be in the perfect condition to watch 20-some episodes of...
I know. Can you imagine being on all those antihistamines and watching The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives?
With your sketchbook?
I know.
That's going to be hilarious. You need to take a week off and watch those mm-hmm. boring Mormons.
I will.
Yeah. When you finish watching it all, you let me know and you can just explain it to us.
I will try to draw a narrative for you.
I am stoked. Oh, I love your work. All right. Okay. Fourth clip for today. Joseph loved a captive audience of ladies.
So in Saints, we learned that Joseph Smith was meeting frequently with the Relief Society in the spring. And where do we get those sources and what were they talking about?
We have those Nauvoo Relief Society minutes in full. There were 6 meetings that he attended and he would listen and he would also preach. The vision he had and the things he preached are really inspiring.
I had a look and they're not inspiring. Between trying to squash scandals, there wasn't a whole lot of preaching. The preaching was more like just laying down who you should accept and who you shouldn't accept in your group. And
was he like trolling for future sealing partners?
I would say he probably was, but at that point, he was trying to squash rumors about spiritual wives and stuff. At that point, it was still considered bad out in the public. So I don't know how he was doing 2 things that were completely antithetical to each other and then making it work. But I mean, that is what a cult leader will do, isn't it? And in fact, any religion, there's always things that there's cognitive dissonance about. You know, don't do as I do, but do as I say. But then if you do as I do, it's because God told me to do it, but you can't do it, but I can because God told me to with a flaming sword, but you can't do it. It all just doesn't make any fucking sense at all. And then later, you know, remember Bennett? He gets talked about in the minutes a bit later too as some sort of person who is doing spiritual wives wrongly. And I'm thinking, okay, well, how's the right way to do it then, Joseph? Because clearly it comes along later.
If there's rumors going around that, like, hey, he's checking out people for eternal sealing partners, you know, there might be some vying for his attentions as well.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, they loved him.
If you want a good spot in the celestial kingdom to be sealed to Joseph Smith, wouldn't that be like the prime spot?
Yeah, the wet spot in Joseph's bed.
I always imagined it as like a little suburb, like where Joseph has the biggest house in the neighborhood and then like an offshoot of wives build up around him.
Yeah.
Like, because I mean, that's my imagination of what, and I mean, to be honest, to some extent, isn't that what they've built? These yeah. little suburbs of, you know, ticky-tacky houses with wives that all look the same.
Yes.
It sounds like FLDS and it sounds like Big Love.
Yeah.
That's what Utah is on a grid.
They can plug into the grid, plug into Jesus, and plug into their wives.
I mean, they can have connected backyards. Right. Do you know what I mean? And all your wives can have the kids play together. You don't have to walk just around the block.
You've got free daycare.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You can have your coffee in the morning, although you won't be doing that. You'll be having your something else. And all the kids can play together.
In an ideal world, you'd have 7 houses in a circle and you'd just go from one to the other throughout the week, right?
Yeah, but there's going to be some men that lose out on that one, hey? It doesn't really support a whole lot of men. It supports a whole lot of women.
That's why there's selectivists who can get into the group.
Ah, right. Yes. Oh, Joseph. Yes, he loved to hang around with women. Doesn't matter how, just wants to hang out with them. And you can't blame him for that completely. It's the fairer sex.
I mean, there's a perfect algorithm, I'm sure, in his head.
All right, the last one here from this episode I've called Secret Sacred Truths Equals Bullshit.
The men in Nauvoo had been participating in Freemasonry. Let's listen to this quote and then talk a little bit about the temple endowment as introduced in Nauvoo.
Some aspects of the ordinance reminded Heber Kimball of Masonic ceremonies. In Freemasonry meetings, men acted out an allegorical story about the architect of Solomon's temple. Masons learned gestures and words they pledged to keep secret, all of which symbolized that they were building a solid foundation and adding light and knowledge to it by degrees. Yet the endowment was a priesthood ordinance meant for men and women, and it taught sacred truths not contained in Masonry. We have received some precious things through the prophet on the priesthood that would cause your soul to rejoice, Heber wrote Parley and Marianne Pratt in England. I cannot give them to you on paper, for they are not to be written, so you must come and get them for yourself.
Oh, we can't write it down. Probably because we don't really know what happened anyway. Joseph was just talking and he sounded so charismatic. I don't know what it was, but it was good. I definitely learned something. I can't remember what it was. What was it? Oh, it's sacred. It's secret. It's bullshit.
They had to compete with the Masons. They had to do something to make people feel special and to put on fancy clothes. But going to the temple with a group of other people of like-minded believers kind of also solidifies your place in the cult. Like,
right.
It clues you all together as you get older, that you're doing these things together that you feel are important. Like, there's some kind of psychology behind that.
That's gotta be.
The value of rituals.
Oh, absolutely. The value of rituals is so important. And people who went through their temple ordinances and they were like, whoa, this seems really, really strange. And they say anybody who wants to can get up and leave. But you look around and nobody's getting up and leaving.
Mm-mm.
Well, you're not going to get up and leave because you second guess your own instincts. And you say, well, if everybody else thinks this is normal, even though it's a little weird for me, I'm going to stick with it. But 90% of the people may be thinking something's off here. But it's that nobody wants to be outside of the group.
There's a study out there somewhere that explains this phenomenon, though, sure. But these leaders have figured it out on their own.
Yeah. Yeah, they've figured it out. They're the lone wolf that know that they can lead the collective.
They're probably thinking to themselves, how far can this go?
Yeah.
And up until the day he was shot, Joseph Smith was thinking the same thing. How far can I get away with this shit?
Right? Anyway, so that's all the clips I had. What have we got there?
It's a temple ritual in progress. Funny hats. They have aprons on. I know, that's a really bad stick figure. There's a curtain in the background and there's a guy up front with his hands in the air going, oh Lord, hear the words of my mouth.
The words of my mouth.
Like there's a phrase that they, I can't remember what it was.
That's what they say. No, that is it. It's like they're not coming out of his ass. Although
yeah,
you would be mistaken for thinking that.
But they do a little chant. It's very endearing. I mean, what are you going to do?
What are you going to do? Thanks so much for joining and getting through Saints 28, guys. And
thank you.
We'll talk to you again soon.
I guess this is my new normal.